You're listening to the Rockford Symphony Orchestra podcast, where we look to inform about our upcoming events and give insight to behind-the-scenes happenings at the RSO. In this episode, we continue our conversation with Maestro Yaniv Attar as he dives into his goals for the RSO. Hear about how he chooses his programming and his aspirations for outreach. Let's get started.
So what, you probably haven't had time to think too much about this, but I just initial thoughts on the vision for the symphony or for the RSO, and I know you'll spend a lot of time getting to know the community, but do you have any initial dreams that might be on the horizon?
You know, we haven't even started planning what's coming next season. And I think what the great thing about having a music director search is, you know, you've had a conductor who, you know, did amazing job for 30 years. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden you get 9 conductors in 1 year. It's like having speed dating in slow motion. So you have so many different ideas. I mean, you see what work, what doesn't work, what got the community excited, what...
We heard from the patrons.
Yeah, I'm sure you did. But, you know, so many different approaches. So it's almost like, now what? Mm-hmm. And my goal is to work with the newly formed Artistic Advisory Committee that we're going to have, and, you know, build really exciting programs that I think for me, the most important thing would be to balance a healthy kind of balance between some of the core repertoire that we all mm-hmm. love and come to the symphony for, combined with things that I think will be really interesting for people to discover. Mm-hmm. Something that will create new excitement, new challenges for both the orchestra as players, but also for the community. I think sometimes orchestras tend to not give so true. And I think a lot of it comes with, of course, with what you pick when you curate a program, but also is how you present it.
That's exactly what was going to be my next question. When you have new things, what do you see? What does that process look like introducing the community to something new and different?
I really enjoy talking from the stage to prepare people for what they're about to hear, especially if I know that this is probably something that they haven't heard before. And I think it's great to give everybody some kind of guidance mm-hmm. of mm-hmm. something they could grab on, or the background story behind what they're about to hear. And when you do that, it makes the listening experience so different.
Well, I am the person, you'll always hear from me if I don't like something. I would do that to Steve. He would send in the programming and I'd call him and say, okay, listen, I don't like this piece. Yeah. I need you to tell me why I should like it, because if I'm supposed to be excited about it as the education director and educate people and talk about it, I need to know what's exciting. And he would. He'd say, well, this and this, you know, he'd give me, and I'm like, all right, so.
That makes sense. Exactly. There has to be a reason why it fits this program. Right. There has to be a reason why why we decide to pair it with this piece, mm-hmm. Or why we decide to program this particular piece at this time of the year, mm-hmm. if it's an anniversary of something, and in a lot of the music that I think that people will discover, sometimes with the musicians, there is a lot of relevance to either today's, what's going on in the world today.
And hearing that from you makes all the difference. It always has for me, hearing, you know, in the past from Steve. And so hearing from you and saying, this is why it's beautiful, this is why it's important.
And, you know, it took me a while to understand how important that kind of presentation is, because what I take for granted is not necessarily the same of somebody who's coming with you know, totally fresh ears. And sometimes I'm jealous of people who are coming and experiencing it for the first time in their lives because you know, it's really new to them. And then I give them this introduction. And sometimes I even make the orchestra I ask them to play some examples from this part of the piece or this part of the piece. and then say what this is about. Right. And then right. when the performance happens, people already are like, oh yeah, that's the part he was talking about. That's what mm-hmm. this is. This is what this means. And mm-hmm. it makes the experience, it's amazing how it's almost sounded like they've known the piece all their life and they're just hearing it again. So presentation is everything.
Absolutely. The level of enjoyment is so much deeper. This is going a slightly different direction, but I feel like we have to. One interesting thing that's happening in education right now are guitar classes. Oh. I hear about it in the area from high school, secondary, middle school and high school in particular, that these guitar classes are just exploding and kids are registering and they take 1 year of guitar and that's it. And then there's no bridge for them to go into any other musical class or to learn more. There's no place for them to go. And so I, as the education director, have thought, how does the symphony, and I mean, not that you can have an answer right now, but how does the symphony create that bridge for them? What's our role in getting these kids sucked in? I don't know. There's so much potential right now.
I mean, first of all, it's exciting that it's happening.
Yeah.
That's really important. I think the hardest thing is, after you capture them with this excitement, is to actually keep nurturing it.
Yeah.
That you know, like exactly like you say. I don't know that I have a good answer for this now because, you know, I feel like I don't know this part at all. Especially, you know, when I came to audition as well, it was in a really bad time of COVID.
Oh, it was.
So I didn't even go to the schools.
Right.
Because they probably didn't allow anybody to come. And I don't remember if our guest artist,
we went out
Daniel.
With Daniel, yeah, okay. to one guitar class.
Okay. So
but
that
it was
must
small.
Have been exciting.
It was like 20 kids. I mean, it was not, yeah.
But I guess I'll have to bring more guitarists, right?
Yeah. But it's starting in elementary, and I think it's such an interesting phenomenon that right. this is a direction in the area. But let's keep talking about education.
Sure.
While we're on it, what do you like to do educationally? Is there something that gets you excited or that you find it easy to focus on? What's your passion when it comes to that?
You know, when I was assistant in Alabama, I was with the Alabama Symphony. We had a really strange way, in a good way, of doing our education concerts. We actually never did the education concert in our big hall and brought kids. We actually went to the schools. Mm-hmm. I mean, they had the money, they had the grants to do that.
Yeah.
So I know it's not practical to like get the whole orchestra for school. But what was so exciting was that we played at a gym. You know, mostly it was usually the gyms.
Yeah.
Or the lunchroom or whatever.
Of course.
And the orchestra was in the middle. And the kids were all surrounding the orchestra and were, you know, no more than 5-10 feet away from us.
Amazing.
And as much as I hated the acoustics in those,
sure.
As you can only imagine, but I think the experience mm-hmm. Was just unbelievable to experience live music that close. I don't know that I have the right answer for it, but I do want to find some kind of way to engage young people in music being a lot closer to mm-hmm. the orchestra, that they feel that they're part of it, that they can like live and breathe the music. Whether, you know, whether you like, I don't know, rotate classes around the mm-hmm. stage. I know there's a concert series in New York. It's called Inside Out, I think.
Oh.
Where basically the audience is all around the orchestra.
Oh,
and,
wow.
and this is not children. We're talking about adults.
Oh, that's
and
cool.
And they're basically spread around the orchestra and experience the music, like sometimes even in between instruments. So they're totally spread out. And people, like, perception of hearing music that way is totally different than, you know, sitting in a hall being, you know, mm-hmm. 50 feet apart. So I want to find ways to, you know, people to experience that kind of closeness
mm-hmm.
To the music.
Because,
mm-hmm. you know, when you're around the orchestra and you hear people breathe and
right.
And listen, and you can hear people listen. It's there's this sound to that. I think it's totally different.
Well, I think one thing related to that is having recorded all of the concerts over the past year, we right. see the audience, if you watch the videos, you see a different perspective because you don't always get to see the conductor.
Well, right.
You don't ever get to see the conductor when you're in the audience.
That
but when
true.
You rewatch the concerts digitally, there was a camera on the conductor each time. And so the perspective of the communication between the conductor and the musicians and the way that the team at Future Memory Media edited it together sometimes, it was because there were multiple cameras on stage.
But you know, some orchestras post-COVID, because a lot of their concerts were videoed, what they started doing with some orchestras is have a camera on the conductor.
Yeah.
And they actually show it on screens that are brought so the audience can see that. And the reason is, I mean, you know, aside from what we do on stage, we as conductors, sometimes we are the storytellers.
Right.
For the audience too.
Yeah.
And you know, for the audience to be able to experience the facial expressions of the conductor or the gesture that they're basically preparing everything that's about to come, all of a sudden they're like, oh yeah, you know, they see what happens. When I go to concerts in different halls, if there's a place at the choir,
of course,
behind
too.
The orchestra, that's the first place I go to because I want to see the conductor, and I feel like I'm part of the action.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is so much fun.
Yeah.
Even if acoustically it's not, you know, it's not the best place to sit.
No, but you
hear all the horns and the brass and...
But you're more engaged.
Right.
In what's going on because you
exactly.
see it.
Exactly.
Yeah. I think that's been a really cool part of this whole process is having those recordings and seeing that communication.
You know, I think that's the biggest, I would characterize it that way, misfortunes of modern life. Because, you know, when you experience music, you know, in the 16th, 17th, 18th century, and concerts were in, you know, all these like rooms and palaces and not in concert hall, and you were basically, you felt like you're having a private concert just for you. And all of a sudden you're in a 2,000 seat hall,
right.
and everything is far away, and it's there is some kind of distance that...
Yeah.
This is why I think talking to the audience and explaining things is so important today. Because you break this barrier between audience being so far away and us performing being on stage. And that's something that, you know, you want to try to avoid.
Well, I think not just breaking the barrier, but to me, and I've seen it happen, is that it creates a sense of community. That everyone's
yes.
experiencing the same thing in the same moment in time. And not just the audience, but now... It's the musicians and the conductor and the audience are all
right.
sharing this. And that's the power of music,
absolutely.
Really.
Absolutely.
And you know, we saw that with our Nutcracker student matinee in December. Uh-huh. Lucas, the choreographer, told them that they couldn't talk. They could clap whenever they wanted. And if they really liked it, they could yell bravo. And so you're in this room of 2,000 kids just clapping and yelling, bravo, bravo, bravo. But then shushing each other too, because they didn't want to miss the next moment.
Right.
In this sense that it's all ages, all different backgrounds, and they're all experiencing this thing together, you know, ballet with live orchestra, which is not always something middle school and high school kids are
right.
really excited, or boys, you know, are into. And so this idea that we can create these moments of ultimate community.
Right. And I think that these kind of moments will make people feel always comfortable and welcome in the concert hall.
Yes.
So, you know, I hate when you know, somebody claps at the end of a movement and people are like, shh, you're not supposed to clap. Of course you are. If you liked it, clap.
Yeah.
I encourage it.
Yeah.
It's so funny because, you know, when you think of in Mozart's time, when you finished a movement, if the audience did not clap, the composer would be offended.
Right.
And here we are with all our, you know...
Or repeating movements because people
right.
liked it so much.
Right, right. It was just so different. And I think the world of classical music in general has a lot to learn from, like, the jazz world in that sense.
Sure, when people solo in jazz,
yeah,
you clap.
You clap because it's awesome.
Right. It's impressive.
Right. And you enjoyed it. As a performer, I think it feels really good.
Yeah. Yeah, the energy between the audience and the performer, giving
exactly.
and taking.
And, you know, this is something I remember really well from my concert here in last January, is that you felt an incredibly warm energy from the audience.
Mm-hmm.
And that felt great.
Mm-hmm.
I remember that. And, you know, as us as performers, not just me, the orchestra, we feel that.
Yes. Yes.
So
I think we all felt that in the room. This is special. I mean, it felt special in the moment, which is exciting. So an interesting thing, I think there's a core group of people that we have that enjoy those extra experiences. But I mean, and if either of us had the answer, we would be, who knows, not doing this, probably consulting and on TV. But how do we get more people, I think, is the constant question, to come enjoy those moments and experiences with us before a concert?
I mean, you know, it's all about how you market those things. Mm-hmm. You know, so many times we, you know, at the beginning when we started doing it, and people are like, oh, I didn't know. Oh, I had no idea that. And no matter how many times you would put this in an email blast or whatever. People miss it.
Yes.
And and this is the thing, because I think in today's world, people are bombarded with so many events and information and requests to participate. And eventually people, in some ways, they have to filter it, mm-hmm. even if they don't know that they're filtering it.
Yeah.
But I mean, I think as long as we keep trying and find creative ways of letting people know about it and be part of it.
Yeah.
But that they don't feel that they're, you know, just a number to us, customer number. So, you know, I think eventually it will catch.
Yeah.
You know, many things that I remember starting it with other orchestras, that, you know, it was so slow to begin with, but then it built up and the work pays off.
And I think we have rebuilding to do because of COVID. I mean, there were lots of things that were happening before COVID. And so, I mean, you're really coming in almost with a clean slate.
But, you know, in a way, I mean, I'm not saying no matter who you would have chosen as next music director, this is a great time to have a new music director. As COVID is, you know, fading, and you want to rebuild,
mm-hmm.
Not just rebuild what was before, but also reach out to audience that you did not have before.
Right.
Having a new music director is a perfect time to do that.
Yeah, yeah. And Rockford is so excited to have you here. It's a friendly town.
Yeah. Excitement is all mine.
Yay. All right. Thank you so much.
My pleasure. Come listen to the symphony.
If you'd like to hear more from Yaniv, be sure to register for our soundbites as he interviews Narek Aratunian, our guest clarinetist, for the upcoming Scheherazade performance on March 18th. Thanks for listening.